originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is indeed Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual stablemate. He is retired top trainer, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. And we are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. Want to welcome everybody tuned in on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and all of you joining us worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or mobile devices. You're doing that at horseracingradio.net. And JT, if you recall, last week we had a chance to visit with a trainer, Matt Hebert, who was just getting started with his training career, worked a long time for Buff Bradley, and now going out on his own. Today, we flip the script, and we're going to visit with another veteran trainer who has had a lot of success and really has a great story to tell.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy. I've followed him around the country. Wherever he is, I seem to show up on a regular basis. Gulfstream and Monmouth Park and those places. So, he knows what he's doing, and he gets good horses and makes the best of them. So it's great to have him on tonight.
Well, the 53-year-old trainer was born in Miami, but grew up in New Jersey, where he has experienced considerable success throughout the course of his training career, which began in 1989. And since that time, he has saddled 695 winners, won more than 30 stakes races, and his runners have amassed more than $20 million in purses. Yeah, he is trainer Greg Sacco, and he is with us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Greg, congratulations on all the success, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And by the way, let's not bury the lead here. You're going to be pointing for the Belmont Stakes next Saturday with a horse by the name of Jovia, who won the Long Branch Stakes at Monmouth just a couple of weeks ago on May 12th.
Yeah, no, Jovia is a talented colt. He's lightly raced. He put it all together in his last race in the Long Branch. He came out of that race really good. And, you know, timing may be right for him. He has tactical speed. He'll have to step a notch and improve off his Long Branch effort. But in going a mile and a half is a question mark for us and everybody in the race. But it just may be the right timing to take on a race, which looks like it may lack speed. And you never know. I mean, we're taking a shot, but he's got some talent. We haven't bothered him out yet. There's a lot more in the tank. And, you know, it's a big step up. There's only one Belmont a year, a classic race, a race you dream about winning. And so if all works well on Saturday with his work and cools out well and scopes clean, we'll load him up on a van Wednesday and head to Belmont in preparation for the Belmont Stakes.
The Belmont's so unique in the fact that nobody knows if their horse can stay the mile and a half or not. Do you think that gives a horse like yours kind of an edge because you've got some speed, and it seems like speed horses win the Belmont more often than not?
You know, I guess it can go both ways. I mean, I do like that he has the tactical speed. And, you know, the Wood Memorial was no indication of his distance limitations. That race was, you know, kind of a debacle from the start where, you know, Nick hit him leaving the gate there, and he ducked in a little bit, and he's a horse that's got a little bit of an iron mouth, but he settled down nicely now. But back then, he was only a second time going two turns. He got away from Nick and then knocked out Brady Collarum from the beginning. It was just a disaster. Well, I don't think it was a race where, you know, okay, you know, he packed it in going a mile and eighth against higher caliber. Yes, you know, then he came back in the Long Branch and rebounded, and he had a lot in the tank that day. And I always thought he was a horse that, you know, is a stayer, and the two turns would be well within his grasp. The mile and a half is, you know, is a very tactical race, and you don't know until you try it. He gives us every indication the way he trains in his long gallops, and even though he galloped out in the long ranch, that he can go that far. But then the question mark is, you know, can he do it against the likes of War of Will and a talented group of colts in the Belmont?
Greg, he's pretty game, that horse.
He's very game.
He digs in all the time. I mean, you got to love that, especially going longer.
Yeah, no, he's super game. Mind Control's workmate last summer. They both were like heads of partner works. So Mind Control was always a little bit better in his works. But, you know, Jovia, from day one, acted like, you know, he had a lot of class and ability and a nice composed horse. And he just, you know, a little green. And even this year is a little green. It kind of still waits on horses a little bit. He did it on the long ranch a little bit, then he spurted away, won very convincingly. I put a set of blinkers on him last week a few times, and I really didn't like it. He was balking a little bit, so I said, you know what, we're not going with the blinkers. So he's gonna run without, you know, without blinkers. He hasn't put them on. We haven't put them on yet. But the suggestion from an exercise rider is, and he does wait on horses. I just don't like what I saw when he had them on. So, you know, he will race without them. But, you know, like I said, we haven't gotten to the bottom of him yet. And he's lightly raced. He'll have to improve. We know that. But we think he's more than capable, you know, of stepping up. And it's just if him stepping up is good enough. So we're happy where he's at with his training. And put another good work in on Saturday. And if all goes well, you know, we'll be, you know, over the moon to run a horse in the Belmont.
Well, obviously no Triple Crown on the line this year, but as you alluded to earlier, Greg, it is still a classic race and still a race that every trainer dreams about winning. When you think back through the years of the Belmont and growing up watching racing, being around this sport with your family all those years, and we'll talk more about that in a second, but are there some Belmont stakes that kind of stand out more to you than others as you were watching them, thinking, okay, someday I might be able to do
that? There's definitely one that stands out. You know, like I was in like sixth grade and affirmed an alley that I were at my friend's house in West Long Branch and where I grew up, and like 20 of us were in the kitchen watching the race. And, you know, I think that was the pinnacle, and probably that's the spot of the day that the light went off in my head that I wanted to become a trainer like my dad. I mean, that's probably one of the best Belmonts ever, and it was a classic duel with Affirmed and Ali Darn. It's probably the one that, you know, that stands on my mind is, you know, that classic stretch duel between those two great horses.
Were you an Affirmed guy or an Ali Darn guy?
I think I was rooting for Affirmed that day, even though, you know, I love Ali Darn too. I think I was an Affirmed guy, and I wanted to see the Triple Crown and Stevie Coffin and, you know, the whole story that went along with that. So I was definitely rooting for Affirmed.
Yeah, you spent some time in California, so you had to be an Affirmed guy. Just cash that bet right now.
I went to high school out there and actually worked for a trainer out there named Dale Landers in the early 80s, and he had a really good sprinter named Shankite. I used to walk every day, and he was a really cool horse, but I used to work at Hollywood Park throughout school and part of the summer before I came back home. But Dale Landers was a hell of a trainer out there. His son Dan, I think to this day, is still the assistant to Ron McAnally, who was his longtime assistant. He was the assistant to his dad back then. But yeah. I have some good memories from Hollywood Park. And that was first track you could bet at a kitchen. I was like, you know, we don't have this thermometer in Jersey. I have windows in the kitchen. I said, this is perfect. So it was nice to make a wager at the kitchen.
Yeah, that's good. Those are the days you could go to the window right there outside the kitchen and then watching the guinea stand on the backside. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Dale Landers, very good trainer. He was instrumental in me getting Michael House as a client, and Mr. House has been a big supporter of mine for the last 30 years. And I got to say, you know, Dale did a good job for Mr. House for many, many years, and it wasn't until he got older and decided he didn't want to go to Del Mar that Mr. House was looking for a trainer, and I happened to have a good week that week. I won 6 races in a week, which for me is like a good year. And he came by my barn. He says, "You've been doing pretty good." I said, "Yeah, I've had a good week." And he goes, "Well, I need a trainer." I said, "Well, isn't Dale your trainer?" And He said, "Yeah." He said, "But Dale doesn't want to go to Del Mar, and that's where I live, and I want to have some horses down there."
In our business, as you know, Jude, you know, timing is everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. I never was more aware of that than that particular day, and we've had a relationship. I ran his farm here in Kentucky, and we've had a relationship for, like I say, at least 30 years, probably might be longer. I kind of ignore the years now that I'm old, but you know, it's amazing how that works.
Yeah, it's a small world. He was a good guy. He was a nice guy to work for.
Greg, didn't timing play a big role with your brother Rick in terms of you being associated with Red Oak Stable and with Mind Control? Didn't I read something about that too?
Yeah, well, my brother Rick, you know, I've been training for Mr. Brunetti, and of course he passed away in 2018 for I think 1992. So it's been it was a great relationship with him and his two sons. And my brother Rick has worked in a lot of different capacities at Hialeah, but I know he grew up, you know, working with horses with me, and, you know, he's a really, really good horseman, and, you know, we worked from the ground up. And he became the race manager for the Brunettis and does all the breeding with son Steven. And so, you know, he, you know, chooses with Steve where the to go. And, you know, fortunately for me, he picked out Mind Control to head my way. And, you know, he thought that it's a colt that I would, you know, needed a little bit of TLC. He was a little rambunctious on the farm. But you know, from day one, they told me he had a lot of ability. So, you know, it's nice to have your brother on your team with you. There's nothing like that. And, you know, he's a big supporting factor to the Brunetti family. And so, it's, you know, it's nice working with your brother, you know, working with someone that, you know, is a good horseman, that, you know, is very knowledgeable of the game. You know, it helps a trainer. You know, and any trainer can tell you that, you know, they need a... It's tough when you're, you know, when people aren't overly knowledgeable and they think they are, you know. It's a learning process. I mean, we've been doing it all our life, and it's just, you tell you, know, you learn something new every day. You know, this game is multifaceted, and, you know, you pick up things here and there, and you try not to make the same mistakes that you have in the past, and surround yourself with good help and good clientele. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't always work, but, you know, you just keep persevering, and, you know, you're doing something you love, hopefully things work out for you.
We'll spend plenty of time talking about Mind Control as we move throughout the show here this afternoon. But, Greg, let's go back to the beginning here for a minute, because I don't want people to kind of get twisted around as we talk about your background. We mentioned your brother Rick, but there are so many other relatives, including your father, and I think even going back before your father, that were involved in the business. Take me back to the beginning and walk me through some of that.
Well, from the beginning, when my grandfather came over from Italy, he was a builder, and he made cement blocks by hand. And but he had a love for horses, and he started Mammoth Stud in West Long Branch. It was like a 25-acre farm, and he, you know, built the farm by hand and the barn. And he started doing this little breeding, and that led to my uncles and my father. They started actually with polo ponies and show horses. And that eventually led to Thoroughbreds, but that was, you know, the beginning of Mammoth Stud, which is a name that I inherited from my dad. And I raced my horses under the banner of Mammoth Stud. But so that's how it basically, you know, started, with him for the love of it. And my dad and three uncles trained, and my one uncle was a jockey turned trainer, and it was my dad's assistant for many years. So it was, you know, after school, we went to the farm there in West Long Branch, Mammoth Stud. My brother and I were, you know, 7 and 8, and muck stalls, and we lunged horses and rode the ponies, or some of them we put saddles on, some were bareback. And I kind of felt like that's how all kids grew up, you know, just working on in a little at the farm there and with horses, and kind of learning from the ground up. But it's not for everybody. You know, I have, you know, several, you know, cousins that, you know, can't stand horses. You know, it's not for everybody. But my brother and I, from day one, we were probably hooked, and, you know, we've never looked back.
New Jersey has such a rich history of breeding thoroughbreds, and it's probably the last place anybody thinks about now when they're talking about breeding. But there's some beautiful farms there, and some, you know, people that are still very loyal to the New Jersey program, and it's really cool that your family's dates back that far with it.
Yeah, no, you're correct. I mean, I think Green Tree, and there were several big farms that were here. Over the years, that Fred Seitz, big Kentucky guy, his family started in New Jersey, you know, right here in Lincroft. And, there's, you know, it's deep and rich in history and breeding. It's a beautiful, you know, everybody thinks of New Jersey, like a Newark airport, but New Jersey sure is beautiful. We have beautiful farms throughout the state. And it's a program that was really ahead of all the neighboring states. And then when the casinos came in the 70s, it kind of, you know, we lost its luster to the casinos, and a lot of farms moved out. You know, we were ahead of, you know, the curve with New York and Maryland and Pennsylvania. And now it's coming back. But the casinos hurt the tracks in New Jersey. We had like the Golden Triangle, which was Monmouth Park, Atlantic City, and Garden State. You know, three of the prettiest tracks in America. And Garden State was beautiful in South Jersey. Atlantic City was a beautiful track, rich in history. And, you know, so many good horses ran there. They ran the United Nations there. And Garden State, I mean, Secretariat went to Garden State. You know, Mongo, so many, you know, horses had come through New Jersey that had great careers. But, you know, the casinos came in, you know, different legislation in the state that it kind of went downhill, and we lost Garden State and Atlantic City. Monmouth has always been, you know, just a beautiful, picturesque track on the Jersey Shore. And, you know, it always hung on because I think because of that. And now with the sports betting, you know, we got a big shot in the arm, and Monmouth is back on the upswing. The breeding program is back on the upswing. It's going to take some time. But, you know, still one of the best tracks in the country, and like on the Jersey Shore, rich in tradition with the Haskell. And I think hopefully with the sports betting and everything, you know, on the horizon, that, you know, New Jersey will be back and, you know, prosperous like it used to be.
Visiting with trainer Greg Sacco here on Trainer Talk, presented by Faze at Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Greg, you mentioned the name Fred Seitz as somebody who started in New Jersey and now prominent with his Brookdale farm here in the state of Kentucky, in Versailles, Kentucky, as a matter of fact. And Fred is somebody who served our country as a Marine. If I'm not mistaken, your dad was also a military man too, wasn't he?
Yes, not my dad, Michael. My dad, you know, was World War II. He was in Burma, and he's actually in the cavalry in World War II. Pretty interesting. And you know, then after we came back from the war, he and my two other uncles, they got right back into horses instead of going into the building with my grandfather. You know, he still did his breeding. And, you know, I think that's when they got hooked is when they were on top of a roof doing shingles at a farm, and they saw the mares and foals, and they were like, you know, we don't want to be builders. We want to be horse guys. Thankfully for my brother and I, got into the horse business because it's a labor of love, as Drew can tell you, but it's gratifying. And, you know, there's nothing like developing horses and working at the racetrack. You know, it's a fascinating life, the horse racing industry. And really don't take anything for granted. Really enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah, I love the cavalry part of his story. I think that's so cool. Do you have much memorabilia around the house of your dad from those days?
Yeah, you know, my brother has a lot of great pictures from those days, and, you know, young training career, and, you know, some of the military stuff. My brother has all that. He kind of has all that stuff over me. But we've got some nice pictures from back then, and you know, the nice memories to have.
Yeah, it's really cool. My dad also served in World War II and had a lot of that stuff, and we still have it. It's neat to see it every once in a while. My brother Paul.
Yeah, no, it is. It is neat. Never really talked about the war too much, but my brother and I used to press him a little bit. He never really wanted to talk about it too much, though.
Yeah, my dad was the same way. It's very interesting that they're very, very similar. My dad didn't really like to talk about it that much, but he would once in a while when he...
We'd kind of pick his brain, but he'd never bring it up if it was on his own.
Right.
Greg, tell me more about Monmouth Stud. How many acres, and what's it like if I'm going to visit?
Well, Monmouth Stud is now a big development, but it was a 25 acres, and we had a barn, and we had a 3/8 mile little track there, and we used to break horses there and lunge them. And when I go by, you know, it's just many homes now since my grandfather's death in the mid-80s. The family dispersed it. My brother and I were a little bit too young to take it on where we probably would have. But it was a fun place to grow up, and, you know, many cherished memories there. You know, let's see, my brother and I were lunging horses there. We were like 10 years old, and friends would come over. And what are these guys doing? We're lunging horses. it was pretty fun. And then we had some of our friends would come to work with us. They come to the farm and ride, and, you know, looking back, it was a nice childhood to grow up at the farm.
Yeah, kids love the farm life. I mean, it's just so much more relaxing, and it is a lot different than what most kids live through these days. So I think it's a big edge.
Totally different. Really different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would assume, Greg, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you can look back on those days, and you can credit a lot of your current success to the lessons that you learned growing up in that environment.
Yeah, well, you know, it gets you to be structured and you know, it taught we appreciated the animals, and you know, the horses always come first. My dad always taught us that, and you know, it's you know, life lessons. You know, we were working at the farm, and it kind of, you know, carried over to adulthood, and you know, that's just to keep putting one foot forward and do what you're doing, and you know, and you know, things can fall into place for you, and that's just, you know, a matter of you enjoying what you're doing and being happy at your craft. You know, and growing up doing it, we had a, you know, nice perspective of the horses and the animals and to appreciate them.
Was there ever a time or two, Greg?
We got into it because of loving it, and not just because, you know, of thinking we could make money at it.
Yeah, yeah. Was there ever a time, Greg, that you maybe considered doing something outside of racing?
No, not really. You know, I think I've been asked that question a few times before. No, you know, I think I knew early on that, you know, between, you know, the farm and breeding and foaling the mares and breaking horses, it was just, you know, it was just a lot of fun and enjoyable. And then, you know, my dad had taken us to the sales at Hialeah when we were little, and that was amazing. And, you know, seeing, you know, the 2-year-old sales and the workouts at Hialeah, it was really, really gratifying, all the different, you know, aspects of the horse racing industry. It was really intriguing, and you know, it was never anything dull. And even as Jude can tell you, when you stable to one track and even shipping to another track, you know, it's fun to even ship horses and race at different places. So it was always, everything was, you know, very new and great experience. And to this day, you know, I still get excited when they load the gate. And I guess, you know, when that dies down, maybe I'll pass it on to my son. If he wants to get involved, he's going to UK in the fall, and he really enjoys racing, so I'll see if he wants to carry the torch.
Is he going to play football at UK?
No. He played football in high school and just got done with lacrosse. But no, he's. I think his sports career is over, and just playing intramurals now.
Well, you make sure you tell him if he needs anything. Find Mike or I will take care of him.
Oh no, I appreciate it.
Yeah, good for him. We're glad to have another wildcat in the racing community.
Absolutely. you mentioned Hialeah. Mike and I stayed down in Florida for the winter a couple winters ago. It was a great experience going to Hialeah. We went to the quarter horse races, but what a beautiful place. What do you remember about Hialeah?
Well, Hialeah, I mean, first thing that comes to mind, of course, is the flamingos and, you know, the history of that track and from a horseman's standpoint, you couldn't have trained over a better racing surface. So that was terrific. You know, the beautiful Sonny Fitzgibbon's path, you know, you could really, almost a little art of training there. They had, you know, the chutes where you could, you know, walk your horse down the path and go in the chute and do your figure eights. And, you know, just a really, you know, without being at a farm, you could really take advantage and, you know, really, you know, train your horse there instead of, you know, rushing in and out. I mean, it was a lot to offer in Hialeah, but just, you know, the tradition of Hialeah. And, you know, Mr. Brunetti kept that alive for many years, and I had a lot of respect for him before I met him. So I knew he had kept that place alive. And, you know, it was just the trainers, jockeys, horses that have all come before. It was really, really cool and so deep in tradition that it was a special place.
Yeah, we could get a sense of that. I never had the privilege to visit Hialeah when they were actually up and running, but just going there, and I guess they were doing quarter horses, I guess, when we went, right? But just being there on those grounds.
Yeah, they were doing the quarter horse meet, you know, for the casino.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see that there, but it would certainly be nice to see thoroughbreds back there one day.
Well, you know, you watch the guys on the Antiques Roadshow, and they go, oh, this dresser has good bones. Man, you go into Hialeah, I mean, you just... I cannot even imagine how beautiful that place was, because it was so beautiful, and it's old and, you know, kind of they've revamped everything, you know, for the casino and all that. But I mean, it is just gorgeous. And I could just imagine how beautiful that place was when it was.
Oh, no, it's everything you can think of and then some. And then they used to have a breakfast there. So it's probably 1985, and I'm assistant to my dad, and Hialeah breakfast, and I look over and it's Jimmy the Greek with his medallions on, Angel Penasini, Alan Jerkins, Cordero, Vasquez, Howie Tescher.
Wow.
And then Pash Weinstein, who was a character, was a bloodstock agent. And, you know, they're all at a table holding court. And I was like kind of this young kid. And they, Howie Tescher, who I knew, said, oh, come on down, sit down, Sacco. And sat down and, you know, listened to those guys' stories. And, you know, it blew me away. I didn't say a word. I just like sat there like a fly on the wall listening to them. And Jimmy the Greek is giving us predictions. And it was amazing. You know, he was there like every Saturday at this breakfast. But, you know, some great, great memories of Hialeah. And that was definitely one of them, sitting down there with that group of guys.
You know, that's the thing about this particular game, and we talk about this a lot on other programs, Greg, that, you know, myself, Jude, I think so many people we've had the chance to visit with on this program, we all started falling in love with the sport as fans. And somehow our careers took us in different paths, and we've ended up where we are. But I think first and foremost, every trainer, every jockey, every owner, you're a fan first and foremost before anything else.
No. You're all fans. And, you know, I think every trainer, I mean, from whoever it may be, from the smallest tracks in the country to some of the biggest tracks, I mean, we watch races from all over the country. I mean, I'm sitting there watching a race at TVG, and, you know, it could be the last race of Penn National, and, you know, they're dueling down the stretch, and yeah, it's exciting, whatever level, you know, different levels of excitement. But, you know, you're a fan of the game, and, you know, everyone knows what goes into, you know, a day at the track, and, you know, it's certainly not easy, as Jude can attest to that. It's a lot goes into it. So many setbacks, you know, you have to roll with the punches. But, you know, being a fan of the game is certainly, I think, from every trainer and owner, and I think it's the appreciation, to be a fan and to love our industry. It means a lot. But I'm a fan of our sport, and, you know, from the breeding industry. And, you know, there's so much that goes into every facet, you know, to the sales and everything. Everybody's trying to work hard for a common goal. And like you said, everybody ends up, you know, where they end up, what they love doing. And but it's really cool, all the different aspects of our industry.
Well, it's neat because you never know when the next good horse is coming, and it can be right around the corner. And even if you're a trainer at a smaller track or a lesser track, you can get that big horse too. You know, eventually they can work their way to the Kentucky Derby or to the Breeders' Cup. And those are the stories I love, when it's just somebody that works hard every day that gets a good horse, and then they get a chance to shine. I mean, that's what makes the game.
Yeah, no, this is what makes our industry great is, you know, even from an owner standpoint, yeah, there's a lot of very wealthy owners, but, you know, most owners can't own a basketball team or a baseball team or football team, but you can own a racehorse, whether you own it by yourself or a partnership, and you just don't know where that's going to take you. That's what, you know, what makes our industry so unique, I think.
Yeah, very well said. He is trainer Greg Sacco, and he is our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We'll get to a short break. We'll come back and talk more about Greg's career and look back on a pretty good horse by the name of Mind Control. That's in the second half of the show. Stay with us. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Calling all racehorse owners. Nominations are now open for the Fasig Tipton July Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale. Delivering record results to sellers, this sale has quickly established itself as the nation's premier Horses of Racing Age Sale. Fueled by 28 horses selling for $100,000 or more, including the $700,000 sale topper, My Missed Habit. Last year's sale achieved a record gross and produced an average price of more than $90,000. Race to the top of the market. The Fasig Tipton July Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale. July 8th in Lexington, Kentucky.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
For a commercial farm like us in Frankfurt Park, you have to get value for money. Uvetsi won a Grade 3 in California.
Big performance by Uvetsi.
And then we bred Take Charge Paula.
Take Charge Paula with the win.
When we can get some of these WinStar dollars, as far as we are concerned, it's the same as real money, because we're just putting it back in again there for the coming year. Over the next couple of years, I think it's going to become even more important.
Talking with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, what do Flair strips do?
Mike, I still hear people ask, is there something wrong with that horse? It's got that thing on its nose. It's kind of like asking, is there something wrong with that jockey? He's got that helmet on his head. Both helmets and the strips are for protection. The strips are proven to protect horses by reducing lung bleeding, conserving energy, and reducing fatigue. The strips are simply a tool to help keep horses healthy so they perform their best.
Learn more at flarestrips.com/learn.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the top of the stretch, Mind Control, Nitrous, and Mucho turn for home across the track in the hopeful. It is Mind Control, Mucho on the far outside, Nitrous in between those two. Sambaye is fourth. Three of them still going at it. Mind Control, Nitrous, and Mucho. They continue to race across the track, and Mind Control is clinging to the lead. Mucho on the outside is second best to Mind Control in the hopeful. And then came Nitrous and Sambaye.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. That was Larry Colmus with the call of last year's Grade 1 Hopeful Stakes at Saratoga. It was on September 3rd, and it was a huge effort for Mind Control, who is trained by our special guest, Greg Sacco, who is back with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Don't forget, if you did miss any portion of the program, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure. That's horseracingradio.net. Greg, in the first half of the program, we were talking about good horses and how, you know, you don't know where they're going to come from, but they will eventually come to you if you're patient enough. And your dad had a great quote about that. I read it as I was getting ready for the program here today. He said, the good horses, they do come to you. You just don't know when. Timing is everything. And I'm sure you agree with that, especially getting a horse like Mind Control.
Yes, no, that my dad couldn't have said it any more poetic. No, you just don't know when they'll come. Mind Control was, you know, perfect timing for us. Still get goosebumps listening to that call with Larry Colmus. It was really cool. And Mind Control is... You know, it's one thing to win my first Grade One last year. And like I said, I've been blessed to win many stakes, but my first Grade One was special. And the nice thing about it is it developed into a three-year-old, you know, which was great. You know, you don't know the development from two to three, if that will continue. You know, you certainly do hope so, but some horses don't develop, and he's developed very nicely for us. And it's really been, you know, a pleasure to see the development of Mind Control as a three-year-old.
Take me back to that day last September. You mentioned the thrill of winning your first Grade One, but put us there with you. He's coming down the stretch. We heard Larry's call. He crosses the finish line first. Put me there with you. What was that moment like?
It was an exhilarating feeling because my wife and my two kids, William and Sydney, were with me, teenagers. And, you know, it was special because and they know what goes into it and, you know, the daily routine and hitting the road, traveling to track. And my kids were actually, when the horse pulled up, they were hugging and crying. And I looked over and I tried to hold it together, and I did. I composed myself. But, you know, that's it was a special feeling. I mean, you know, you work hard every day and, you know, you hold things, you know, for, you know, that you could win a Grade One. And a Grade One at Saratoga is, you know, it's more the icing on the cake. So it was a special feeling all the way around, you know, for the Brunetti family. Mr. Brunetti had passed away, you know, earlier in the year. And, so it was, you know, it was a great feeling for all of us and, you know, my staff and family. It was pretty exhilarating. It was definitely a day I'll never forget.
It's hard to be a trainer and a dad at the same time. A lot of things you miss because you're at the track, like Little League games and that type of stuff, but the kids seem to enjoy the fact that you're off on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah,
they get a little perks out of that.
Right. Jude, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, for years, I went to Florida every winter, I mean, prior to being married with kids, and then when the kids came along, we went to Florida a couple of years when they were younger, and it was a little hairy going back and forth and where they were at in school. And I went to Fairgrounds in 07 into 08, and they were still young men, and they came back and visited. But I just decided after that year, I think I went back to Florida one more year, and they came with me. And then the last 7-8 years, my kids got into sports, and my daughter's into dance and cross country, and my son plays football, basketball, and lacrosse. And so I just stayed up here in the winters and kind of grinned and bared it between parks in New York. And I don't regret doing it. I mean, it might have hurt me, professionally, because you have to, the winter months is where everybody gravitates towards, and a lot going on, and there's not a lot going on at Aqueduct in the winter or parks, even though you're making a living. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. I was happy the way it's all worked out, and my son's graduating high school this year, and I didn't miss anything, and my career's fine. I'm blessed to have some nice horses in the barn, and especially Mind Control and Jovi, and some nice babies, and so it's all good like that. But you do make sacrifices, and I didn't really want to miss anything, and so I kind of made that choice several years ago, and I'm glad I did.
Do you ever see a situation where Will or Sydney somehow become involved in the sport of thoroughbred racing?
Probably my son Will. He's pretty, he doesn't miss a race. I mean, he's calling me from school, how do the babies work out of the gate and stuff like that. And I text him back, shouldn't you be in class? Or, who was better in the work? I mean, he wants updates at 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean, and so. And I go, I hope your mother doesn't know you're texting about horses, but he loves the game like my brother and I have loved the game. And so I see the gleam in his eye when he comes to the track, and his friends are with him, but he enjoys the game, and I've taken him to sales and taught him about confirmation and walk and different things. And so I definitely see him doing it. I mean, he's going to go to UK. I think it's close to Keeneland. I think that was one of his
right. Yeah, that's putting the fox in the head.
He said, "I don't know if there's a track in the whole mess." It was an easy choice. But
I love that kid. He's great.
Yeah, tell him to look us up. We'll get him out to the track.
We'll take care of him.
He'll be there with the whole. Probably have his whole dorm there.
he can open up a division for you.
No, he's already saying, "Dad, if these 2-year-olds develop and things," he said, you have to stable it. So I think for the first year, if everything comes to fruition and we have these babies develop for us and a couple of the older horses, I think I'll be stable to Keeneland for the first fall of my career this year.
That's cool.
You think Will would make a good horse trainer?
Excuse me?
Do you think Will would make a good horse trainer?
Yeah, no, he will, because he's almost like ground up. I think he will, and he understands the highs and lows, by watching his dad all this time. And I think he will, and probably be a better trainer than me. He's really in tune to the horses. He knows how to pick them out on the track, at race time. And he's a very keen eye for someone that's 18 years old.
And you don't see your daughter getting involved at all. Where do you see her ending up?
I don't see her. She's very studious, and she's going to be a junior. She might go into journalism or something like that. She loves coming to the races, but she has no way the interest that Will has in the industry now.
Well, maybe she can come to work for us, be a broadcaster.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Perfect.
The girls are doing really well right now.
Yeah, no, they're terrific. Yeah, all across the board, they're good. The shows from everyone. Donna Barton's terrific, and Peter Orton's daughter's great. Real, really good stuff.
Yeah,
Greg, when did you first know that Mind Control, you were sitting on a special horse with him?
I think after we breached him a half mile, nothing really went that fast. It would impress me about him was his gallop out. Like, I think he might have gone to 48, but probably galloped out like 59 and change or something like that, something scary. And so, you knew he had the gears that the average horse, doesn't have. And very smart, composed horse, no wasted energy, laying down all the time, finish eating head always in the feed tub. Just the horse that, loved to train and loved to do what he was doing. and just kept improving. But I knew he was special. A couple of those gallop outs were, you know, ultra impressive. And as Jube will tell you, you know, it's not how they work. It's that gallop out that's so impressive. And he had that gear that you don't see in the average horse.
Yeah, that's a special feeling when you work one, you tell your rider not to go very fast, you know, just take it easy on them, and then they pop off with a 48 and a gallop out and, you know, 59 and change or a minute or something, and you just get that feeling inside.
Yeah, you know, it's like with your 140-pound, 35-pound exercise boy, not a jock. And so I said, okay, oh boy, this is a talented colt, you know, let's keep him sound and, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah, everything changes in one day, right? Because you're just going along with your usual program, and then, oh, my God, what are we going to do now?
our race didn't go at Monmouth last summer. And so I saw there's a race at Delaware. We'll take him down to Delaware, you know, probably off those couple works. I said he's about 85% ready, but, you know, we'll go down there and, you know, crush whatever down there. And then we're in the receiving barn. And there my son goes, Daddy, I was this horse – services horse is a monster. And my control's a medium-sized horse, very, you know, beautiful colt, but he's medium-sized. This horse over here is a monster, and it was a Paul. And 16-2, this big gorilla in the race. It's, oh, boy. So he opens up a 1-9 in the paddock, and my son looked over at me and said, Dad, we might be in trouble. Paul was 1-9, and they duel down the stretch, and he beat us, and it was a good race, but I think we beat him back in the base for this year, which is nice. But Carl Paul went on to win the Saratoga Special the same day that my control book was made. And so it's pretty flattering for both horses.
Yeah, that was a good maiden race, huh? Two
that was pretty
stars
good
come out of
the
that.
The third horse was, you know, about 15 back.
Yeah. That's good.
That was a pretty tough maiden race in July at Delaware.
Yeah, very much so. Talking with trainer Greg Sacco on Trainer Talk, presented by Fayzit Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Greg, we talk about all of the different things that you have to do as a trainer to get a horse to the races, and then when you get them there, everything has to go right. What qualities or what things make for a good horse trainer?
Well, I think that, you know, you have to have patience, and you know when to back off your horses, and you have to train your horses individually as opposed to just, you know, the same routine. A lot of it is basic. You have to have a good feeding program. And you have to know your horses, you know. You have to know, you know, there's times when, you know, I have something scheduled and I'll back off of it just by looking at the horse and maybe look a little light to me that day. Or, know your horses. Of course, you have to have a good staff working for you. You know, without a good staff working behind you, you know, a trainer, I don't think you can get the first base, you know, people that you can count on. And of course, then you have to have, you know, you place your horses in the right, you know, the managerial part becomes a big play. You know, you have to place your horses correctly and for them to be competitive. I mean, that's, you know, that's a big part of our, you know, of our game too.
Who's the greatest trainer you've been around?
You know, I think the best trainer the guy that I admired the most, you know, is probably Bobby Franco. Because his horses, you know, they got better with age. And, you know, he started out, you know, I was a kid, I remember him claiming horses, and he was ultra, you know, successful claiming horses, turning them into stake horses. So it's not like he was just, you know, got all those, you know, Group 1 horses from Europe. You know, he earned that, and he was a great claiming trainer before he was a great stake horse trainer. And then, you know, his horses got better with age. They didn't really do nosedives. So I had a lot of respect for Bobby Frankel. I think was a tremendous trainer, and I think he was part horse. He was terrific.
For a kid that was, you know, born pretty much in the streets of New York, he had this uncanny natural horsemanship. I think it just animals in general. I mean, if you saw the way he treated his dogs and
he was an animal
person, you know. And I saw him when horses would get hurt, you know, be laying in the straw next to the horse, and you know, talking to him. And I mean, just a very natural horseman, and his horses had careers as opposed to meets. I mean, it seems to me nowadays a lot of trainers just, you know, gear them up for this meet or that meet or whatever, and then they disappear off the face of the earth. But Bobby's horses were the same year in, year out. His van lady, Vita Randall, used to tell me, you know, I don't need Bobby's stall application. It's the same horses that go from track to track to track.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think, and he always had him. He might have had him in two places in L.A. I don't know. You'll know more than that, Jude. But I think, you know, they were basically under one umbrella.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he stabled at Sandy, and he also always had a string at Hollywood Park. So, you know, it was between the two. But he was almost always at the track where they raced. He wasn't one of those guys that, you know, would say, oh, I'm at Sandita today, when he was really at Hollywood, and, you know, back and forth they go, and they're at neither joint. But I mean, he was into his horses and really, you know, knew everything about each one. For a guy that he didn't have that many, he wasn't in the 300 class, you know.
No,
he'd probably have like,
I mean,
you know, 80
and,
to 100
up, you know, every major stake. And I mean, you had to beat Bobby to win the race.
Yeah. Yeah, and he hated to lose, and he hated to see the sad faces of his owners if they got beat.
Right.
He was running two fillies in a grade one time at San Anita, and I had one in the last. I'm walking over to the receiving barn, and he's leaving. And I said, are you leaving? He goes, yeah, I don't want to see the long faces when they get beat. I said, you're like 3-5 and 8-5.
Yeah, yeah,
they ran one, two. Yeah, he said, I'm going to listen to Bill Gar on the radio. I'm going skiing.
Yeah, no, he was tremendous.
Yeah, he was. I agree with you 100%.
Big void in the game when he passed away.
Yeah.
He was great for our industry, and a great trainer. And like I said, you know, horse lover, that comes first.
Greg, we spent time talking about Mind Control, and of course he's a special horse because he gave you that first grade one victory at Saratoga last year. But if you were to look back on your career and you were to think about some of the others that you've had the privilege to be around, what other horses stand out to you and come to mind almost immediately?
Well, I've been fortunate to train, you know, many stake horses, you know, not like some of the big, big guns, but I've, you know, I've had a nice, blessed career and been very fortunate. You know, some of the nice horses I had, a nice New York bred, was probably one of my favorites, named Foreverness. And he won the Fort Marcy in New York, and he won a stake at Belmont for me. You know, it was just a really nice, genuine horse that Mr. Brunetti bought at a sale. He was one of my favorites. Another filly, Unbridled Essence, won the Matchmaker at Monmouth. She was another one of my favorites. So, you know, those horses are special to me. My first stake winner was a filly named Never My Love that we bought for $5,000 out of the sale at Garden State. She had a club foot. And I think if I knew what a club foot was, I really didn't know that she had the club foot. My dad said, you know, you bought a filly with a club foot. I was like, I didn't really look that down there. That I was looking at her legs. But fortunately, she won a few stakes for me, which was my first stake winner back in 89. But, you know, looking back, I've had some other nice horses. And I think a lot of it was, you know, a building plateau to, you know, the Mind Controls or Jovia. I've had some nice ones. Nothing like Mind Control, though. Or Jovia. You know, I had some 57 Vet, Junk Bond King, all horses were multiple stake winners, but, you know, nothing of this caliber. That, you know, they do it everything effortlessly. You know, Mind Control is just a really special horse. Jovia is on the verge. It's exciting preparing him for the Belmont. You know, it's, you know, you're at a different level of racing here where, you know, the stakes are so high and the pressure is there, but it's, you know, it's welcomed pressure. You know, you work your whole life to prepare yourself to run in these kinds of races. So, you know, looking back, I've had some really nice success, and looking into the future, you know, with these horses and the babies coming up, I'm, you know, really excited this year can bring for us.
Is this going to be your first classic?
Excuse me?
Is this your first classic race that you're participating in?
Yes, yes.
So that's got to be a thrill just in itself.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's, you know, yeah, it's a thrill. Like I said, Judy, I'll have to step up to the plate. But, you know, also looking into this race, I mean, if you were gun to your head, the top three distance horses, Maximum Security, Omaha Beach, and Game Winner, in my mind, aren't in the Belmont. You know, I think they would be arguably the top three.
Yeah.
That's also another decision-making line. I think we'll take a shot.
Greg, when did you first walk into the paddock and look around and see all of the other great trainers that were saddling their horses and think to yourself, yeah, you know what? This is pretty cool. I made it. I belong here.
You know, I guess, you know, I've always, you know, felt that, you know, growing up the son of a trainer, you know, you, the perspective you have, you know, you need the stock. The stock makes you look good and bad, you know, and so, you know, I always thought that, you know, my dad's tutelage and my uncles and, you know, the love of the horses and, you know, how we were brought up and, you know, the work ethic, everything was there. But, you know, you have to earn it. You have to earn your respect of your peers and everything. And I, you know, I felt, you know, ways back that I've always, you know, earned the respect of peers and, you know, the way we run our shed row and the way our horses look and everything. And so I've always felt I belonged. And, you know, but at this level, you know, you still have to prove yourself. And like I said, last year winning the hopeful was one thing, but then, you know, he's developed into a three-year-old. And that's something you want to do and you want to accomplish. And so, you know, very proud of Mike Control and my staff that's prepared him and, you know, under my guidance. But, you know, you need your staff. And, of course, you need the horse to develop. So I've never had illusions that, you know, it's, you know, wave a magic wand. It's the trainer. I mean, yes, it's the trainer. But, you know, you need the staff and you need the horse. And so, you know, as long as that continues for us, I think that, you know, I'll be continue to grow as a trainer and the barn will prosper. And, you know, we can compete at these high-level races, which, you know, you dream about as a kid. I'm 53. I've been doing it, you know, I've been training for 30 years. I've been doing it my whole life. But, you know, relatively not, you know, past my prime, I think that, you know, there's I enjoy this level, and I've always wanted to race at this level. So it's something that is coming to fruition, and I'm certainly not taking it lightly.
Well, you've come a long way since Political Pocket at Garden State Park.
Was, I haven't heard that name in a long time. That was my first winner. Wow. I haven't heard that name in 30 years.
What do you remember about that day? Tell me about that day.
I think, you know, most of my uncles are in that picture because I think we thought he would win. You know, I haven't seen the picture in a long time, but I think almost the whole family showed up for that race at Garden State. It's many moons ago. I actually never forget my first one. I think Joe Rocco rode him. But, we've come a long way, and hopefully, you know, we continue on this path.
Well, let me throw another name at you then and tell me about this day. A horse by the name of Never My Love.
Never My Love was my first stakes winner at Laurel. She'd won her first two races. That's a filly that we bought. I bought with a club foot with my brother. And I think we paid $5,500 or something for it at the Garden State sale. She was by Wing T, pretty chestnut filly. Chris DiCarlo rode her a cold December day at Laurel. But it was a good race. It was a good race. And you know, I'll never forget that filly, no. That picture's still hanging on the wall.
When you said Joe Rocco wrote her, that was Joe Rocco Senior.
Yeah, Joe Rocco. Yeah, right. Yeah, junior.
Junior wasn't even born yet, probably.
No, he wasn't born. No, that was Senior.
Does Junior ride for you now?
Yeah, he has ridden for us. You know, he'd ridden for me in New Jersey and Delaware, but now, you know, he's like in the Midwest, so I haven't really had the opportunity to ride him. But Junior's a good young rider, and you know the Rocco family are all wonderful family, so it's good to see Junior have success.
Yeah.
Greg, do trainers actually have go-to riders where when you have a good horse in a big spot, you want that rider aboard?
Yes. No, yeah, I think we have riders that we feel comfortable with. You know, there's so many good riders, but, you know, in New Jersey before Bravo had left New Jersey for New York and now he's back, you know, Joe Bravo was one of our go-to guys and ridden Chris DiCarlo over the years. We were lucky enough to have Johnny V ride for us. He rides a lot for, you know, of course, for Todd and Brunetti, and my brother had reached out for him for Mind Control. But, yeah, you have your go-to riders that you feel lucky with. Jose Lascano's a guy that we've had some great success with in the past. And so, you know, you have riders that you feel comfortable with, yes. Bravo was our go-to guy here for many years in New Jersey.
Yeah, he's such a good rider, and he's really – kind of had a resurgence. I mean, he's at the top of the heap, and he's been really good when the biggest riders are out of town. He swoops in and steals all the good horses for the day.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Riccio has his book, who has Ortiz, so, you know, he's pretty high in demand, and I think with the 1-2 punch of, you know, with Jose Ortiz and Joe Bravo. It's a pretty good combination for Jimmy.
Yeah, not too bad. That'll make you some money.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Greg Sacco with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phase at Tipton on HRRN, looking back on his life and his career. Greg, if you weren't training horses, I know you said this is the only thing you've ever wanted to do, but if you weren't involved in this business, what else do you think you may find yourself doing?
No, it's a tough question. I would probably find myself doing something outdoors. It's never really a office type of guy. You know, maybe something to do with oceanography or something like that. I was always been intrigued with the ocean. But maybe something to do with that. Marine biology or something like that. Something to do with the ocean or the sea. I've always liked, definitely something outdoors.
Well, if you get a chance to get away with the family, and I know that's rare for a horse trainer, are you going someplace with a beach?
Well, we have a great little spot in Bell Harbor that we love at the Sea View Hotel. It's a great old school hotel. My wife loves Bell Harbor. It's close to Gulfstream where I can catch some races. I always have, my family always says, Dad, if it's next to a track, we can go. If it's not, we're not going. my daughter says, it has to be next to a track, or we can't go to Atlantis. There's no racetrack in Atlantis.
Dad, Barbados. Take her to Barbados.
We went to Disney World, and of course, Dad has to drive an hour to the Ocala Sales because we're in Disney World. You know, anything to do with a sail or track or farm, I'm good with it.
So
which I
classic.
Think Jude is the life of a trainer.
That's it. That's exactly right. That's you got to find those spots, or at least where you can watch your horses on TV. Like Cabo San Lucas, I could actually get the signal at the bookie shop, so I could. I went down to Cabo San Lucas one time, and I had like 5 horses running that week. I got to see them all run. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and Jude brings up Barbados. That is the perfect vacation destination.
Take your daughter there. She'll love you for
yeah,
it.
They yeah. They have racing in Barbados. It's incredible.
Oh, well, we'll have to take that. We'll make that trip.
Every other Saturday they race. If you need any connections, just give us a shout.
That's really neat.
Yeah, it's a cool place. Well, Greg, only a couple minutes left here. This has really flown by. So I'll just finish by asking you, as I do all trainers, to let us know something about yourself. And I guess you kind of already did that to an extent, but something about yourself that people might not know. So outside of racing, any other hobbies or sports that you follow, anything like that?
I'm a big sports fan. New York teams, the Jets, the Mets, the Knicks. Unfortunately, we're not too good, but I'm a diehard Jets fan. I love to watch my kids play sports and go to their activities. And when I can, with the family, I'm still a beach bum. Still love the beach.
Yeah, it's great. Me too.
Can't beat it.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, no beach here in Kentucky, but we get a little bit of Gulfstream.
We'll have to get used to something because he loves the beach too, but I'm sure Keenan will be fine for him.
Yeah.
All right, Greg, final question. To win the Belmont next Saturday would be what?
Would be the pinnacle of my career, and every trainer's dream to win a classic. It would be a dream come true, and it's a privilege to be in the race, and to win it would be an unbelievable feeling for myself and everybody with my family. It would be just a wonderful feeling to accomplish that. That classic would be unbelievable.
Yeah, trainer Greg Sacco, ladies and gentlemen. Greg, really appreciate the visit, and all the best next Saturday. All the best moving forward and with your kids as well. Keep it rolling, and really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you. All Have right. a great day.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Sacco here on Trainer Talk. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net.
Yeah, great guy.
Fun visit. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.